afternoon. I'd like to welcome everybody to House Hess. It is about 3:05 on Tuesday, April 7th, and present is Representative Stutes, Representative Calrico, Representative Foster, and myself, Chair Seaton. Remind everybody about their cell phones, and we've been joined with Representative Tarr. And today we're going to hear two bills. The first is, it's Resolution HCR 9, Congenital Diaphragmatic Hernia Action Day. And so, and after that we will go to HB 161, Medicaid Used Durable Equipment. And so those are the two pieces we have today. So if the sponsor of the resolution would come forward and with their staff and introduce yourselves for the record. And since we do have two females, if you speak, would you just say your name first?
Excellent. Thank you. Chairman Seaton, for the record, my name is Sharice Millett. I'm House Representative for District 25 in Anchorage, and with me I brought Grace Abbott. Thank you so much for hearing HCR 9 today. I appreciate the speed in which you scheduled the hearing. HCR 9 declares April 19, 2015 as Congenital Diaphragmatic Hernia Day of Action. CDH occurs when a fatal diaphragm, the muscle dividing the chest and the abdominal cavity, do not close completely. We do not know what causes CDH or how to completely cure it. One in 2,500 babies is diagnosed with CDH every year, and only 50% of those babies survive.
Excuse me. Can you slow down just a little bit?
Sure.
Thank you.
Babies survive. Today and every day, at least four families will have their baby diagnosed with CDH. CDH doesn't get very much attention in this state, and we hope with the passage of this resolution, families will learn that they are not alone in this struggle, and that this day of action will empower Alaskan families to join cities and states across the nation in raising awareness about this devastating disease. Alaska would be joining 14 states and 9 cities who have also declared that April 19, 2015 will be acknowledged as CDH Day of Action. This resolution of disease was brought to our attention by a dear friend of mine who you'll be hearing from, Todd Mears, who recently joined 50% of the families who have lost a child from this horrible disease. Thank you very much for hearing this legislation, and I have Grace if you want to go through the resolution. It's pretty self-explanatory, but if you'd like her to go through, or if you want any more statistics on CDH, we'd be happy to help you.
Let's go to questions first, and then if we need explanations, we can get them. Representative Stutes.
Thank you. I didn't hear you. Did you say how many babies in the state of Alaska are born with this, approximately?
Representative Stutes to the chair, Grace Abbott, staff to Representative Millett. We have a representative from the Division of Public Health who can elaborate a little bit more on the effect that this disease has in the state. But I will qualify that information with the fact that it is a voluntary disclosure disease within the state, so the data that they have is only voluntarily disclosed by families or hospitals.
Follow-up, Representative Stutes.
Is this disease apparent? I mean, is it something that you can visually see, or are there symptoms? Is it apparent, or somebody might have it, a baby might have it, and you don't know it?
Through the chair, this is Representative Millett. It occurs in utero, so when the baby's developing, it's a condition that can be identified in utero through types of testings, but visually, your infant looks absolutely normal because it's the inside of the diaphragm that is not developed fully, so it's an internal organ issue.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there other questions? Thank you, and I'm glad you made us aware of this because I have been unaware of this or its occurrence in Alaska. If there are no further questions, do you have a question for the sponsor?
Nope.
If there are no further questions for the sponsor, can we get the, let's see, maybe we have them online. I don't quite see who that is. Who was it? Was it going to testify?
Mr. Chairman, there's a gentleman on the phone. His name is Todd Mears, and he recently just lost his daughter, Paisley Grace Mears, from this disease, and he's going to be testifying along with Don Williamson, the founder of the CDH support organization. It's called Cherubs, and she's also online.
Did we have somebody from the department to answer Representative Stute's question?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, this is Grace Abbott. Hopefully the department will be here imminently.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll go ahead and go to public testimony then first and come back. Oh, Jared is?
Yeah.
Jared Parrish, are you on there?
Can you hear me? This is Jared Parrish.
We can hear you now, but it was kind of garbled. Could you repeat who you're representing again, please?
Yes, I'm Jared Parrish. I'm the senior scientist with the Alaska Birth Defects Registry Program, and I'm with the Department of Health and Social Services.
Thank you for joining us. Did you hear Representative Stute's question?
Through the chair, can Representative Stute please repeat the question?
Sure. Representative Stute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to. I was just curious as to how many children in the state of Alaska approximately are born with this annually.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, when we reviewed the data that we had over the past 8-year period, we detected that we, on average, see about 6.4 cases per year, and that's about one in every 2,200 live births. Nationally, as they quoted, it's about one in every 2,500 births. So what we see through our passive surveillance seems to be very similar to what we see nationally.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did you want to offer some additional testimony?
Not at this time.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's go to, we have Don Williamson next.
Good afternoon. My name is Dawn Williamson. I'm the president of CHARIMS. We are the world's largest charity for families affected by congenital diaphragmatic hernia, and we serve over 5,000 families in 60 countries. I'm also happy to answer any questions that you have about the statistics of CDH. A little bit about CDH that I would wish everyone to know is that it is very severe. There's only a 50% survival rate. Nationally, there are 1,600 babies born with CDH every year, so that means that we lose 800 of those children. CDH is also as common as cystic fibrosis and spina bifida, though most people have never heard of CDH, which is why the members of our organization and families such as Amir's are asking their local governments and their state governments to help us raise awareness and take action against CDH, because without awareness, there is no research funding for these children. CDH occurs as a hole in the baby's diaphragm. The diaphragm is a muscle that separates organs from the abdominal cavity from the chest cavity. If there's a hole there, organs can herniate up through that. And we're talking stomach, liver, spleen, intestines. It varies from child to child. When organs move into the chest cavity, it prevents lung growth, and that's why this birth defect is so severe. There is no known cause for CDH, so research funds are greatly needed, and CDH only gets a fraction of the amount of research funding as other causes the same occurrence rate. So we are very, very grateful that you are having this hearing today and acknowledging these children, and I'm happy to answer any questions or give you more information.
Thank you. And are most of the deaths that occur, are those occur after diagnosis, or those occur because there was not a diagnosis?
Most of these children are diagnosed in utero by regular routine ultrasounds. I would say about 85%. The other 15 are diagnosed at birth when the cord is cut and the baby can't breathe. So for the most part, the 50% that don't survive the first 6 months. Babies need surgery very soon after birth. They either do very well or they do very poorly. There's not much in between. There are only a few cases of children who aren't diagnosed within the first few hours, if not the first few months. That is very, very rare. Up until 1990, these children didn't survive at all. There's a 1% survival rate in the U.S. because there was not the medical technology to take care of these children at birth. I think I answered your question, I hope.
You did. Thank you very much. Are there any further questions for Ms. Williamson? Thank you. And you were calling in from Wake Forest, North Carolina, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And thank you very much. So I don't see any other questions here. Thank you for your testimony. And let's go to Todd Mears.
Good afternoon.
Todd, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am.
Great. Would you identify yourself for the record and then go ahead with your testimony for the committee?
My name is Todd Mears.
Did we lose you, Mr. Mears?
No, I'm still here.
Okay. Go ahead with your testimony.
I'm supportive of this decision, but because of how it's personally affected me, my daughter Paisley passed away from this. We learned of this disease at a 20-week ultrasound. Up until then, we had never even heard of this. When we were told what she had, we had no idea of it. And when we were told of the possible outcome, you know, that it wasn't very promising, it greatly affected us. We chose to go ahead with the pregnancy and take our chances of her making it. We had to do all of our hospital visits and that were done in Seattle because they just don't have the capabilities in Anchorage to take care of this problem. So we were in Seattle for a few weeks, but unfortunately, they really only lived for 7 hours. There was nothing that they could do to help her. So this is something very special to me just because of how it's affected my family, my friends. That's it.
Well, thank you very much, and we're sorry for your loss. Let's see, does anyone have any questions? Again, thank you very much for calling in and offering your testimony here. Do we have anyone else in the audience that would like to testify? Do we have anyone else online? Seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony on the resolution. Is there committee discussion or further questions for the sponsor? Seeing none.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go ahead and move from committee HCR 9, which is 29-LS0713/A for Alpha from committee, with no amendments and no fiscal notes.
But with individual recommendations. So is there any objection? Seeing no objection, HCR 9 moves from committee with individual recommendations.
Thank you very much
for bringing this forward. And we'll take a brief at ease while we are signing the paperwork. One before us, and with the sponsor come forward and welcome, and would you introduce yourself for the record and go ahead and present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Representative Lynn Gaddis, and I represent District 7, the Greater Wasilla area, and I'm here to present House Bill 161. So House Bill 161 is a cost-saving bill for the state's medical assistant program. Currently, the Department of Health and Social Services only purchases new durable medical equipment, even though used durable medical equipment is available and is able to withstand repeated uses. House Bill 161 would require that, quote, when the department authorizes the purchase of durable medical equipment, the department shall require a recipient of medical assistant services to purchase used or refurbished medical durable equipment if used or refurbished durable medical equipment is available, is less expensive than new durable medical equipment of the same type, and is able to withstand at least 3 years of use and meets the needs of the recipient. Mr. Chair, House Bill 161 is simply a soft cost savings bill. It says that when we as a state can use used equipment, when it's cheaper, we will. And with that, that's essentially the crux of the bill. It's unfortunate, in my opinion, that we even have to have a bill to do what I think is common sense. We use what's used if it's less expensive, and we use it again and again if we have to. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions for the sponsor? Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want anybody to feel left out, so that's why I'm asking these questions. Do you know, is there a facility or is there a company or somebody currently that does the refurbishing or the cleaning of these used items so they're ready to go again?
And I'm going to have my staff, because I don't want him just to be standing here not answering anything, so if he'll identify himself, I'll let him answer that. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Andrew Ford. I work for Representative Gaddis, and through the chair to Representative Stutes. I do not have a list of providers that have used or refurbished durable medical equipment, but I do have people lined up to testify that work for providers and have samples or short blurbs of how much money they have saved insurance providers by having used durable medical equipment available through renting or purchase.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, and I'm sure there must be some kind of specialized company or something that these items have to go through to be refurbished and be certified that they're, and I was just curious if you were aware of it, but thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see in the packet we have support materials from the Key Coalition of Alaska. Before our committee, one of their suggestions for this year, and I'm just wondering if there's anything different about what this legislation does than what they suggested. It looks like it's kind of exactly what they were calling for.
And through the chair, Representative Tarr, those are exactly the reasons that we're bringing it forward and exactly for these folks. So I appreciate the question, and that was one of their top priorities, and it seemed like such a simple thing to do for them. So we grabbed upon it, and hopefully it passes through. So thank you.
Are there further questions? Seeing none at this time, we'll go to public testimony. And we have John Cannon. Are you online? John Cannon, can you hear us there, Marcella?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
We can now. So would you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. My name is John Cannon. For the record, I live at 3101 Whispering Woods Drive in Marcella. I serve as the president of the Key Coalition of Alaska. I'm online this afternoon to speak in favor of House Bill 161. As was said previously, this bill addresses one of Key Coalition's top priorities this year, to allow the use of Medicaid funds for the purchase of used but refurbished durable medical equipment, or the acronym DME. So on behalf of Key Coalition, I wanted to thank Representative Gaddis for sponsoring HB 161. Representative Gaddis took swift and decisive action in developing a draft bill almost immediately after we had our key campaign in Juneau this year. So that's much appreciated. Currently, the state of Alaska prohibits the purchase of used equipment with Medicaid dollars. Excuse me. The federal government does allow these purchases, and many other states have implemented reuse systems which have shown positive results in terms of cost savings. Some of the states that I'm aware of, Kansas, Delaware, Oklahoma, Idaho, Virginia, Indiana, and Vermont. Kansas, who's probably the most established program, reported $3.15 return on Excuse me a minute. $3.15 return for every dollar spent on the state's reuse program. In 2012, Kansas Equipment Exchange Program had 1,200 requests, reassigned 806 items at a value of nearly $1 million. In the first 4 months of 2013, Kansas program received 397 equipment requests, took in 228 donations valued at $283,000. Also, they reassigned 220 items, which was worth over $200,000. So the idea of a durable medical equipment reuse program designed to reuse valuable and expensive DME equipment that's no longer needed, and having that equipment available for other Alaskans in need, it just makes a lot of sense, both from a cost savings perspective as well as a user perspective. I think it's wise in the way the language in the bill is crafted to keep the language simple and straightforward. This approach will allow the department to work through probably what's going to be some extensive detail that would be required to set up Alaska's DME reuse program. One of the examples I wanted to point out from other states in terms of policy consideration is currently in Alaska, the ownership of the equipment goes to the client. So consequently, when the equipment's no longer needed by the individual, the equipment's disposed of in a variety of ways. Best case, the equipment gets donated to a local organization. In our community, it could be Tournament First Store, Access Alaska, or one of the senior centers. These organizations then redistribute the equipment to a person in need that's typically at an affordable cost or even for free. The less than best case scenario for used equipment, the equipment ends up on Craigslist at a pawn shop or even in the borough landfill. So I suggest that the policy of ownership and a host of many others that would be needed to set up Alaska's DME reuse program, that work be done, as I think is intended so far, be done by the department. Kansas, again, has the most established reuse program. And one of the cautions that Kansas has for other states like Alaska who are considering this is to really be cautious about the impact on the durable medical equipment providers that are in our state. Their caution is that we need to maintain healthy partnerships as we go through this. So vendors like Geneva Woods and others who provide this durable medical equipment, we all need to be on the same page, and what other states have found is that there's plenty enough business, and through collaboration, everyone wins. So it doesn't, a program like this wouldn't necessarily, if we're collaborating together, put any of the current DME providers at risk. So in closing, I just urge you to pass HB 161. Please move the bill out of committee. I think it will result in needed savings for our state at a time when savings are really needed. So thanks so much for the opportunity to testify today. And I did have one other added comment. Jim Beck from Access Alaska is, I think, scheduled to be online today.
Yes, he is.
So he can talk about his organization because they're currently involved with refurbishing durable medical equipment, and he has a pretty extensive experience with all that. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Are there questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, the question came up about the different providers, and I was just looking online, and it looked like about a list of maybe 50 different businesses came up that might be involved in this durable medical goods. Do you see any, you say that there's enough business to go around, and in any smaller communities it looks like there's enough businesses that they could participate?
Through the chair to Representative Carr, again, it's just not my area of expertise per se, but I have done a bit of research on it, and from the experience of other states, I'm not aware that that any providers of DME equipment in other states have been put out of business through with a program like this.
Okay, thank you. Are there further questions? Seeing none, let's go to Patrick Reinhart. Patrick, are you online? And for the committee's information, we also have someone from the department for questions if we have anybody there. Patrick Reinhart?
Yes, can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
We can now. Go ahead. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Patrick Reinhart. I'm the Executive Director of the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education, and I'm calling in from Anchorage today. I am calling in today to urge the committee to support HB 161 regarding the reuse and recycling of durable medical equipment and making it allowable under Medicaid. The council had brought this concept forward to the legislature earlier this year, and as John Cannon just mentioned, the Key Coalition did as well, and we believe it's a good concept and one for consideration by the legislature. In other states, Mr. Cannon talked about some of the other states and the systems that they use. I had an opportunity about a year and a half ago to visit Wisconsin's mobility store in Milwaukee, and it is a program that is basically run by an independent living center, not unlike Access Alaska, but quite a bit bigger. But they had programs in both Milwaukee and Madison. Basically, this was a store that included a vast amount of used equipment, from everything from power wheelchairs to manual wheelchairs to various types of walkers to assistive technology to hospital beds and commodes and everything you could imagine that you would find in a brand new store available in use. What was interesting about this program that I visited, almost everybody who worked there was a person with a disability themselves. So one of the outcomes that could possibly come from a program like this is that we actually give opportunities for people with disabilities an opportunity for employment, and that's always an issue that we're concerned with. One of the things I noticed in walking through this mobility store that a $10,000 wheelchair was now available for sale, either by a consumer directly if they didn't have any other way to pay for it, or through a third-party source, but all of them were about a third of the price. And nothing to me looked used. I mean, everything in that store was well taken care of. They didn't put out stuff that had tears and rips and damage to it. It was all stuff put back out that looked like it was brand new and used and usable for many, many years. Another interesting aspect of the Wisconsin program is that they use prison inmates or the Wisconsin Correctional Industries to actually do a lot of the cleaning and repair of the equipment. And then literally taking every wheelchair part down to the last screw and cleaning them, sterilizing them, putting them back together and putting them available in these stores. Kansas and Oklahoma set up similar programs, and their programs are very adaptable to Alaska, or somewhat adaptable. And I say somewhat because we will have issues related to shipping and collecting that are not always that easy for us. For example, if the state buys a hospital bed for a client or consumer in St. Michael, it may not be so, and then that person moves or passes on, shipping back to Anchorage may not be that easy or even feasible in some instances. So from that respect, we have a bit more of a challenge to create programs like these, but for the urban areas, where there are larger numbers of people, it's going to make sense. The details of a program like this, you would really need to be worked out. There is potential for unintended consequences if we're denying appropriate durable medical equipment. But this concept is all about when it's a when it's appropriate, when the equipment is usable, and there's somebody that can use it, why not allow the state of Alaska to purchase a used piece of equipment on behalf of a consumer that they're serving? And it's not in potential. The potential for this game is not just in Medicaid either. We purchase things through schools for students. We purchase things through DVR, the Division of Voc Rehab, and other state programs. So once a program is established, I think you would see other state entities or other even local entities utilizing it. But one thing that I am, we appreciate Representative Gaddis bringing this bill forward. I'm a little concerned with in the first section where it says Section G, where the department shall require the recipient of medical assistance services. We're more comfortable with the word may, and that's the word that's used in the Senate kind of companion bill, just because in some instances it's not going to be the appropriate purchase. A used piece of equipment will not be the, you know, the right thing at the right time for some clients. So having that option would be important. But other than that, we really appreciate Representative Gaddis and the committee considering this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions? Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just curious on the sponsor's thoughts on shall versus may.
Through the chair, Representative Foster. I think the original intent was any time that there's used equipment over new and more expensive, then you shall. But then when we incorporate the distances of Alaska, the shipping, may certainly fits here. So we understand the use of may, and we don't have a problem substituting shall with may.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And when we get to amendments, we'll consider that. I know Representative Delrico has to leave for another meeting, but we still have four people here. Is there any, does anybody have any problems with the bill if we decide to move it today after amendment? Okay. Thank you, Representative Delrico, for staying. Let's see, next we have Lisa Nolan. Lisa, are you online in Anchorage?
Yes, I am. This is Lisa Nolan. I am the Chief Marketing Officer for the ARC of Anchorage. Thank you for allowing me to testify. The ARC of Anchorage is definitely in favor of HB 161. I myself have 12 years of experience in the field of disability here in the state of Alaska, primarily significant disability that I've worked with. 9 of those years were in southern southeast Alaska. And we would have very typical issues where people would need a piece of durable medical equipment. And because in the remote areas of Alaska, it takes a tremendous amount of time to even acquire the appropriate equipment, we would rely on loaner closets, which have been developed to answer the needs of situations where people have a recently acquired disability or perhaps their disability changes. And the equipment that would be available through the loaner closet is not sufficient. It's not maintained appropriately, but it's best it can be found because the person and their family do not have the ability to pay cash for something that might be offered at a garage sale or at one of the secondhand stores. I absolutely agree. We absolutely support that it makes best common sense to pass HB 161. That's absolutely what I'd like to say. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you for your testimony. Does anyone have any questions? Seeing none, we'll now go to Jim Beck. Jim Beck, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
We can. Would you go ahead and identify yourself and who you're representing for the record, and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, sir. Thank you. My name is Jim Beck, B-E-C-K, and I'm the Executive Director at Access Alaska.
Okay.
I'd like to begin just by thanking the committee and thanking Representative Gaddis for creating this bill, and I'm generally in favor of it. I believe that Access Alaska probably has I think the most and the most mature experience in doing exactly this sort of thing, in fiscal year 2014, Access Alaska loaned, so we're a loan program at this point where we accept donated equipment and then we sanitize. Sterilization is not the industry standard, but it's sanitization. Sanitize and do some general safety repairs and then loan the equipment back out. In fiscal year 14, we were able to loan out between our Anchorage and Fairbanks offices 2,399 pieces of durable medical equipment, everything from the most simple pair of crutches up to rather complicated wheelchairs, power wheelchairs. We value this equipment that we loaned out at north of $500,000 in value. So generally a savings to private insurance, Medicare, or Medicaid. We're really fortunate that we were able to use Rasmussen and Murdoch Charitable Foundation grant funding a couple years ago to buy a piece of equipment called a hub scrub, which is sort of a commercial dishwasher for wheelchairs and durable medical equipment. And we would love to have any folks from the legislature or the department come over to our Anchorage office and have a look-see how this all works. So we think that HB 161 is generally a pretty good idea. We have a little bit of concern that I think will really be more about the regulatory process than the statute. I think the statute looks nice and clean and pretty general. We'll be wanting to be very involved with the regulatory process because, of course, we all know that the devil is in the details and we don't want to wander into the land of unintended consequences with this sort of legislation. Whether or not Access Alaska would become a Medicaid provider depends on the regulatory framework in the end. What we have right now is a loan program that does a lot of good for the communities in which we work, and we would want to make sure that we would be able to continue that. But again, we support HB 161 and think this is probably going to be a really good thing for the state of Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there questions? Seeing none, let's go to Chad Hope with the Department of Social Services. Are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm here.
Thank you. You're there for questions. I had a question. We've talked about regulations a bit, but I don't see the bill giving authority for the department to write regulations for this, for establishing any part of the program. Is that just inherent in the department's ability under 161, or does that need to be laid out as a authorization to write regulations to establish program?
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, my name is Chad Hope. I'm pharmacist and the pharmacy program manager with the Department of Health and Social Services. I believe the answer would be whether or not HB 161 went through, the department would have to promulgate regulations establishing a coverage and fee structure for used equipment. We were actually approached about this idea last summer by Mr. Reinhart and had begun working on that process last year. So regardless of whether HB 161 went forward, adding the used equipment rate would take regulations.
And my question, I just want to make sure that if the statute passes without specific authority to write regulations, if the statute basically precludes you from changing what the statute says by regulation or for modifying the program so it works. I just want to make sure, again, we've had things in the past where we've done things by statute that don't have the authority for writing the regulations, but you're confident that the department has the authority to write regulations to implement the statute the way it is. Is that correct?
That is correct. The only clarification I would add to is with the discussion about the ability to pay for used equipment versus being mandated to pay for equipment, the department's We had previously been approaching this as developing regulations to allow for the purchase of used equipment, not mandating it. So that could be a challenge that the statute in its, or the bill in its current format may present. But if that was resolved with an amendment, then there shouldn't be an issue with the regulation.
Okay, thank you very much. I just want to always get it on the record that there, that we have the ability to do what we want to do in the through the statute. Are there any other questions for the department? Seeing none, I will ask, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on
Mr. Chairman, sorry.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Hoke, is that? Chad from the department. I'm just wondering, Access Alaska was just talking about the piece of equipment that they have and saying how the industry standard is to sanitize, not sterilize. And I'm just wondering if there'd be any concerns about additional providers being involved in this process and how cleanliness and those type of things would be enforced. Or is that you probably have to do that now? I just don't know.
Representative Tarr, through the chair, those are certainly the details that we need to work out and some of the discussions we have had with Mr. Reinhardt and Access and the various groups. Up till this point, our primary focus had been on allowing for used equipment to be billed to us, but essentially creating the market for them, but not getting into that level of detail. So whether or not that falls to Medicaid to write those details into the regulation or whether they would be part of the provider's business practices and policies is still an unknown.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And we did have some testimony that was talking about the ownership of durable medical equipment and, you know, that we have a system where the client owns the equipment. Is there, since we had that testimony, is there anything that would allow you in the ability to have some right of return or anything like that? Would that be a part of the regulation that might come in? Because I don't, there's nothing in here that says that the, who would own the equipment. All it is saying is durable medical equipment, you know, to purchase.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is correct. Currently, the department purchases new equipment and the ownership transfers to the recipient. We do allow for rental of various durable medical equipment, in which case the ownership would remain with the provider until the point where we've rented it, until it's essentially rented to own, then the ownership transfers to the recipient. Part of the discussion that led to the used equipment discussions was the department's been looking at transitioning from a purchase model to a capped rental model of reimbursement. Now, granted, this is a complicated topic, but just like you were mentioning, that would allow for the rental of equipment rather than the purchase outright, in which case the provider would retain ownership. And where this discussion came in was, well, then we're creating a market of used equipment if you're renting it a couple of times. So we needed to build in a reimbursement model to allow providers to bill and use that used equipment. So it was part of a larger discussion of how to reform the program as a whole.
Oh, thank you. And it doesn't seem like this statute precludes that in any way. And I just, since we had testimony on that, I wanted to get it on the record that you were considering different models there. Representative Gaddis has something.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just a comment. There is a reason that we kept the bill relatively, God forbid I would say simple, but so that it would allow those opportunities as we go through this process. So that's why we didn't get into those weeds, because we know as we go through this process we have many different ways we could go. And this just opens the door for what isn't at this time.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions for the department? So I will close public testimony, and we are back to committee discussion. And so, Representative Stutes.
I just have a comment. This certainly appears to me to be a win-win type of bill.
Thank you. Reverend Foster. Would you like to make a
conceptual amendment?
Yes,
I would, Mr. Chairman. On page 1, line 6, conceptual amendment to change the word from shall to may.
Okay, and that will be conceptual amendment number 1, changing on line 6, following department, from the word from shall to may. And I'll object for discussion, and I just wanted to get verbally from the sponsor, is that amendment acceptable to you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that amendment is acceptable, and it aligns with the Senate bill as well, so I think back to that win-win. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. I'll remove my objection to conceptual amendment number 1. Is there any other objection to that amendment? Seeing none, conceptual amendment number 1, line 6, following department, changing word, or deleting shall and inserting may, is adopted. We have another amendment, and I'll offer that amendment as amendment number 2, which is labeled W.1, and that is on page 1, line 10, following the word expensive, we'll insert including shipping. And then on line, page 1, line 13, following before in parentheses, the sentence would start with equally meets the need. And so I'll offer, I'll move amendment number 2. And can we have an objection for discussion?
Object.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Representative Tarr, I'll go ahead and explain the amendment here. One is that we're looking at the is less expensive, and we talked about a little bit in the discussion. It's not nearly as important now that it's May, or this change from shall to may, but still we want to make sure, at least I would like to make sure, that shipping is included in the expense, because we could have a piece of used equipment that was cheaper on the list, but by the time you got the shipping in, it might be more expensive than new equipment, and we wouldn't want to be saying, well, this is what you have to go forward with. And then the other is where it's equally meets the need of the recipient. The question is, if you have a piece of, you need a wheelchair, but you might also need to have somebody that's very frail but can walk, and they need a wheelchair that will actually lift them out so that they can get out of the wheelchair. But if they have just a power wheelchair, they wouldn't be able to get out, and they would require assistance. So as long as the piece of durable equipment would equally meet the needs of the individual, then that's something that I would like to see, just as a clarification that we're not saying any wheelchair is good enough. It's the wheelchair that fits the specific needs of the individual that it's been prescribed for. So that's the reason for this amendment. Is there further discussion? Representative Tarr, do you maintain your, or do you wish to discuss?
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to think this through, because the way the 4 of these items are listed, they are inclusive, so all 4 of these have to be met as a standard. And so I just wanted to think through the issue about the shipping. Could there be a circumstance where we wouldn't want that limitation? Probably not, I guess. I mean, because the having it equally able to meet the needs of the recipient probably prevents any, less expensive piece that isn't quite as useful to that person, kind of the scenario you were just suggesting.
Right.
So I just wanted to think that through for a moment. I don't know if the person from the department is online and has any reaction to that, but otherwise I'd be happy to accept that amendment.
Okay, we can go to Chad. Are you still online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. through the chair, I did hear the comment about the shipping. That is certainly something that we would factor in. Shipping is one of those issues that we're looking at holistically. Currently, our shipping regulations are very narrow, so we've been exploring the idea of how to refine those altogether. But it is understood that used equipment plus whatever shipping may or may not be included in it would need to be cheaper than a new item. We're essentially looking for the lowest cost alternative that meets the recipient's needs.
Okay, thank you. And on line four, there or an item four on line 13, we were putting the word equally in front of meet, so that piece of used equipment equally meets the needs of the recipient. Are you comfortable with that?
Mr. Chair, I don't foresee any challenges with that piece.
Okay, thank you. And I just wanted to go to the sponsor and ask the sponsor whether the amendment's acceptable.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and the chairman did come to me beforehand, and we talked about it, and it just makes a better bill. So thank you for noticing that. So I think most Alaskans that certainly have lived off the road system understand that shipping certainly plays a part in everything that we choose to order. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Tarr?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll remove my objection.
Is there any other objection to amendment number two? Yeah, seeing none, amendment number two, that is W.1, is adopted. Do we have further discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Foster.
Mr. Chairman, I move HB 161, version 29-LS0636/W for a whiskey from committee, as amended, with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
And any objection? Seeing no objection, House Bill 161, version W is amended. Will pass from the committee with individual recommendation and attached zero fiscal notes. And if there's no other items coming before us today, then we will be adjourned at 4 o'clock. And thank you for committee and the sponsor. Thank you.